Welcome back to the Bruce Allen Show with the Odds Point of View. I don't know if you realize it, but I've been talking about my son, and we've been hearing a lot of my son's music on the bumpers for my show. So that's just an interesting counterpoint. It is time for Therapy Talk with Dr. Jennifer Weberman, who's a psychologist and parent coach with over a decade of experience. She's got all kinds of wonderful credentials, but I just want to talk to her. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Weberman.
Always good to be here.
So you have some thoughts on how we parents can try to convince our kids not to make the mistake that we blatantly see them making. I'd love to hear your thoughts because I could learn from this. Definitely.
Yeah, well, when I read your story, I imagined how many parents could relate to a situation where they see their child or their teenager about to do something that they know as a parent is a bad idea. And how the first response is to use logic and reason to explain why it's a bad idea, maybe even citing your own life experience, and then telling your child exactly what they need to do instead or how to fix it. But instead of seeing sort of the light bulb go off and say, wow, that's so true, I should do it that way, the parent has the experience of talking to a wall or, in your case, talking to zombies. And it's just, we know that kids learn things better when they learn it themselves, but it's so hard to watch, you know, the oncoming train coming and not tell them how to get out of the way fast enough. I read a book a while ago by Dr. Ross Green. It's called The Explosive Child. Mm-hmm. And he writes about this thing that he calls collaborative problem solving. And I have used this with a lot of families that I work with, and it's just so great because it's basically a step-by-step, paint-by-numbers, how to go through the conversation of basically serving as a tour guide for your child through their frontal lobe problem-solving mechanism without taking control.
You mean the frontal lobe that isn't yet fully developed?
That isn't yet fully developed. And if they were to rely on their own functioning, then they would keep hitting that train. But if you tell them how to do it, it doesn't work. So how can you guide them through the process? And
okay.
So I wanted to share that process.
I'm on the edge of my seat.
Awesome.
Tell me.
So he talks about the first step, really important. He refers to the first step as empathy. But basically what he's describing is listening to your child's side of things first. Seeing the problem or the concern from your child's eyes and then reflecting it back to them so that they know that you get it. Number one, empathy keeps people calm. And the calmer you are, the more you can use the logical side of your brain. When you get emotionally triggered, the logical side either stops working or doesn't work as well. But it also
I think that advice should apply to every relationship.
Listening first.
Yes. And showing some empathy.
And empathy doesn't mean you agree with it.
Right. Correct.
It doesn't mean you're saying you condone it.
It's just saying you're hearing
what you're saying. Exactly.
Okay,
your child's going to feel respected, and if they don't feel respected, why should they be motivated to listen to what you have to say? All they're going to do is get that sort of like head nodding, tuning you out, surviving the conversation.
Okay. And, of course, the moment you go into lecture mode,
that's like the
key to turning it off in their minds. Yeah. Okay, go
oh,
on.
You're just, Charlie
right.
Brown's teacher. You're just saying, womp, 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 they don't hear
it. Squawk, 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 right.
So to give a different example than your situation, let's say, I hear this a lot, you got your 8-year-old who doesn't like to get dressed for school in the morning, and it's a big battle. So they say, I don't want to get dressed, and you say, you got to get dressed, we're going to be late for school, I don't want to, put your clothes on, or I'm taking away TV, and the conversation just escalates. There's no listening, and you're not getting any information about why your child doesn't want to get dressed. So you just say back to them, you don't want to get dressed, what's up? I hate these pants. You really hate these pants. Is there something about them you hate the most? They're too itchy. These pants feel really itchy. Where are they itchy? And you go on, and you actually get some information so you can help your child pick a different outfit. See how that can go differently? And you haven't solved the problem yet.
It works with my wife. She basically says, you can't wear that. You have to wear this. And I pout and give in.
I don't know if that's quite the same, because then you feel like you lost.
No, actually, she has good taste, and I just let it go. It doesn't matter.
Well, then there you go.
I wear the same shorts, the same sandals, and the same Aloha shirt every day if it were up to me. So, okay, go on.
So step number two, after all you've done is empathize and listen, he calls it, Dr. Green calls it define the problem. But basically, you're stating both sides of the situation. So this is the first time in the conversation you're even presenting your side of it. Up till this point, it's all about your child's point of view. So, you know, maybe in the situation with the child getting dressed, you're like, okay, so I got it. These pants are really itchy, and you don't like to feel itchy. But we've got to get to school on time. So that's the other side of the issue. Or if I don't want to do my homework, but if you don't do your homework, you're not going to get a good grade. That's the first time in the conversation you're even presenting the opposite side of it. So once you've done that, you go straight to the third step, which he refers to as the invitation step. Basically, you're saying, let's think about how we can resolve this. But when
you say that. Let's think about how we can resolve this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, go on.
You actually say that, and then you say, do you have any ideas? Rather than, because you know you already have five ideas, and you want to say them all, but that doesn't facilitate their muscle building of the problem-solving method. So that's when you say, now they might throw the idea, well, I just won't go to school. That's okay, because that's their idea. But then you show them, you're like, okay, well, I can see how that would solve one side of it, but it doesn't solve both sides, so let's keep going. So you show them that you're looking at ways, and it doesn't shoot down their ideas, like, well, that's stupid, that's ridiculous, there's no way I'm going to let you do that. It keeps the conversation going.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do those three steps, and they don't always go smoothly, there should be no expectation that they go smoothly, but if you do those steps often enough, the child gets the message that my parents are listening to me, they're on my side, and you as the parent may not get your way as far as the solution that you would have wanted, but you'll end up with a solution that works for both sides, which is really the most important thing.
You also will end up building up your own muscle in communication. I know you talked about teaching the kid that doesn't even have the fully developed frontal lobe to maybe think beyond the immediate concern. But the truth is, we parents have the same bad habits that just perpetuate problems by going into that lecture mode or immediately threatening or, you know, a punishment or raising our voice. So if we were to do these steps, maybe we too could learn and develop some better communication muscles that, as I said earlier, could transcend just the parent-child relationship. I mean, I can think of times with co-workers and romantic relationships and friends where this tool would be incredibly helpful.
Absolutely. And the New York Times article that was just out about a week or two ago about how important emotional intelligence is for children in their success later in life, this is building the emotional intelligence muscle as well, because you're managing your frustration, you're thinking long term, you're thinking about all sides or all facets of a situation, which, if you develop that skill, like you said, is going to help you in all areas of your life.
Very, very good. We're down to a minute or so left, Dr. Weberman. In addition to reminding people they can find you at theparentingplayground.com, do you have any closing words or closing comments and any other contact information you want to share?
Yeah, I would just say that, you know, the reason this was in a book titled The Explosive Child is because the root of this for Dr. Green was working with children with such low frustration tolerances, where parents are always engaging in power struggles because the child's always resisting things. And so if you have a child like that, you know, I highly recommend checking out the book. Ross Green is the author. And using this as much as possible at home just to help your child manage, you know, those skills. And as far as where to find me, I'm at theparentingplayground.com. That's the blog. On Facebook, we're there under the same name. In fact, I post more often on the Facebook page than I do on the blog itself. And always at Dad Chat, and I'm going to be there tonight. My Twitter handle is dr_Weberman.
Wonderful, wonderful. Enjoy the Catskills, where I gather you are, and I'll look forward to seeing you at Dad Chat and hopefully speaking with you next week. For the listeners out there, stay tuned for my closing remarks coming up after these short messages.
mess with Mr. In Between.